Now, though, to sport, and time to welcome Stuff's national correspondents for sport, Dana Johansson. Good morning, Dana.
Good morning, Catherine.
Big night last night, of course, with the Halbergs. Controversial sometimes. They are no particularly standout controversy this year, however, would you say? A pretty, you know, welcome award dominated heavily by the Silver Ferns.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there were the Silver Ferns were obviously very popular winners on the night, as was Sportsman of the Year, Israel Adesanya, who I heard you speaking with earlier. He's a big personality. And
isn't he just?
Yeah. I'm sure you had your producers on the edge of their seat at several stages. Yeah, but fantastic night for the Silver Ferns. It was really their night. They took out Team of the Year, the Sporting Moment of the Year, as voted by the public. So I guess that kind of reinforces the judges' view there. And then they were named the Supreme Halberg winner. So I think it was always going to be hard to look past the Silver Ferns for that Supreme Award, considering the context of where they'd come from in 2018, you know, being absolutely down and out following that horrific showing at the Commonwealth Games, finishing outside the medals, and then to come back and Dame Nolene Toda to turn it around in 11 months. It was a fantastic,
remarkable
achievement.
And when you look at the All Blacks missing that Rugby World Cup campaign, the cricket's not making it despite the valiant effort in the Cricket World Cup. It often happens, doesn't it, that the three big codes come up against each other, and this is often where the controversy can come. How do you weight these things? But as you said, the standout for the netballers was that turnaround in such a short amount of time, both for the team and for her as well. What were some of the others that caught your eye? I mean, again, Lisa Carrington, sportswoman of the year, just a phenomenal. It was heavily dominated actually by female athletes this year. Obviously, the sportswoman of the year often is, but overall, a pretty good result for many of the female athletes relative to what often happens.
Yeah, absolutely. Lisa Carrington taking out Sportswoman of the Year for the fourth straight year. And that was a really tough category. You know, you could have legitimately awarded it to any four of those finalists. You had really diverse sports as well. And that's what you're seeing coming more into the Halbergs is it's not just your traditional Olympic sports featuring now in the categories. Like if you take Sportswoman of the Year, for example, we had Lisa Carrington, the eventual winner. She was up against Zoe Sadowski-Sinnott, the amazing snowboarder. And then we had Courtney Duncan, who won the World Motocross Championship. And then Laura Langman, you know, a standout in a team sport. So it is very difficult to judge. And, I think, as you say, that there's been no kind of controversial or no columns this morning sort of
raging at some travesty of justice.
Yeah.
And ski racing again in the Emerging Talent Award again, ski racing in the form of Alice Robinson. Sid going from all the way back, the 1970s All Blacks in particular, I remember him, of course, and a huge figure, of course, in Northland sport as well, winning the Hall of Fame inductee and Yvonne Willering Lifetime Achievement Award. So, interesting stuff. What do you draw, though, out of what Tarua has done with the Silver Ferns? And what was the sort of X factor that she had for a team that was clearly lost its way? Clearly the coaching team that she succeeded had not been able to turn it around or had not been able to fix what was broke. And when you look at what she's done, what would you highlight were the key factors?
I think just the way she was able to instill real confidence and belief in that side. I mean, when you looked at them after that 2018 campaign, this was a side that didn't have confidence in each other and they didn't have confidence in themselves. And it was just really a masterclass of coaching, how she was able to go about that and break everything down and rebuild it. And when you think they went to Liverpool, they didn't have a great winning record. They'd still only won 30% of the games under Tauroa, yet they still had this kind of sense of confidence about them. She had just made them understand that they had it with them themselves to do it. And when you look at the way that campaign ran and the approach they took to it and the game style they were playing, no other nation was taking that approach. And I think at one point one of the court announcers says, and it was after the game against Zimbabwe, and she said, did anyone just see what the Silver Ferns did there? No other country is taking this approach. And that was, she had highlighted that the Silver Ferns were playing these kind of lower ranked nations, but they were playing the same style of netball as they would coming up against the big team. So they weren't just taking the Hail Mary approach and bombing the ball into the circle, even though they probably could have got away with that. So everything she did was very, very deliberate, and that really paid off.
Just looking at these individual sports that are coming through again, the other big category win in Sportsman of the Year, obviously, the MMA fighter Israel Adesanya winning it. He did have some tough competition there with V8 Supercars driver Scott McLaughlin, would have been another favourite in there as well. But again, are we starting to see more diversity in the range of sports that are even being nominated?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's taken some sports a while to realise how the nominations process actually works. So a lot of your kind of traditional Olympic sports have always known that you nominate your athletes yourself, and then from there the Halberg judges determine a list of finalists. So there's been previous years where people have complained that some people haven't been finalists, but yet they hadn't been
nominated.
Their own sports hadn't nominated them. Mm. So, I think it was around raising awareness for that. And also, there's just so many Kiwis making their marks on different areas of sport now. So
it's one of the challenges, actually, and we've talked about this with the likes of Holly Thorpe at Waikato University. Of course, she's done so much research into younger people's sporting preferences. She's gone and advised the Olympics on that. That for a lot of folk coming through those traditional sports, rugby, cricket, netball, they're veering off into more individualised sports. I don't know whether that's driven entirely by personal choice or sometimes just that people can't make their commitments to team sports when they're younger the way they did. They need more flexibility. But there are a heck of a lot of new sporting numbers and achievements coming through in non-traditional sports. And I think all the codes, as well as the administrators, have got to get to grips with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think as, you know, the internet age has expanded and back when I was growing up, I wouldn't have even seen anyone on a motorbike. But now you can sort of download something on YouTube and see all these women exactly like you that are doing the amazing things in the sport. So I think that's probably got a lot to do with it as well. There's so many outside influences on young people now.
Well, let's look at rugby. I couldn't believe it when they kicked off Super Rugby in January. I mean, I know we've long past having seasons. These are fully professionalised sports, but, I mean, it'll be Christmas Day next. And on a more serious note, there is a real issue over Super Rugby, and particularly the load management restrictions placed on the All Blacks. How do you read this? I mean, we've got to manage these athletes, but how do you read how it's being handled?
Yeah, there's been a few rumblings of discontent over the first 3 weeks about those load management restrictions. So basically these are minute quotas that are put on returning All Blacks and those that have played internationals last season. And they're restricted to 180 minutes over the first three rounds, and they also have to have a mandatory stand down of two games, I think, throughout the season. And I guess that's proving difficult for some coaches to manage themselves. And we've heard the likes of Tom Coventry, the assistant coach at the Blues, and Tony Brown at the Highlanders, and Warren Gatland, all sort of come out and say, you know, I don't think this blanket approach is right. You've got some players that didn't actually have heavy workloads across the international season. They may have played one or two tests or come off the bench in a couple of tests. And therefore, do we really need to be keeping them out of rugby this much? And is that affecting, I guess, their form during the Super Rugby season? Because they're just not playing enough, simply not playing enough rugby. But I think on the flip side also, I feel like it's quite interesting that we hear, on one hand, you know how the people just drill into us the importance of player welfare and not overloading the players. And yet kind of when push comes to shove and it gets a little bit inconvenient for the coaches, suddenly these policies are controversial. I certainly think they can take a more, look at it more on a case-by-case basis, but equally they do need to have some inbuilt protections for these players, and I think that's certainly how the Players Association will see it as well.
Is it part of a wider irritation that some of the coaches are having with New Zealand rugby when it comes to Super Rugby?
Yeah, it's not just the coaches as well. It's the administrators and even some of the fans. There's the sense that New Zealand rugby has kind of had this indifferent attitude to Super Rugby for so long. Because obviously the All Blacks are their main showpiece. They're the shop window for the sport. And everything is about ensuring they perform on the world stage. And over time, I guess there's been concerns that Super Rugby product, there's not been enough resourced into it. And it's you know, crowd numbers are dwindling, and it's really hard for administrators out there to get people along to the games when they don't have All Blacks running around on the park.
Oh, that's the hard line, really, isn't it? There are many reasons people, you won't get bums on seats, including just the sheer volume of sport that's available, the sheer volume of rugby that's available. But if you are going to turn up, there's a difference between whether there's six All Blacks in a side or none.
Yeah. I mean, it's a really complicated issue about crowd numbers, and I think it's so multifaceted, and that's why New Zealand Rugby are undertaking this extensive review of rugby that was announced last month. So, yeah, I don't know if... I mean, if I think back to from a personal perspective, when I was a kid watching sport, you know, I didn't so much watch it for the teams, because I grew up in a small town, we didn't have our own sporting franchise. It was more to watch the players, like I watched netball to watch Bernice Mene play. So I think there definitely is, for young fans in particular, that sense of going along to see the individuals play rather than the team.
The other question about load, and it's a real issue for every sport now, just talking, it was really interesting seeing some of the comments, some of the reaction to the coach Gary Stead taking a break. And when you saw the size of the schedule that he had been operating to, especially as a you know man with a young family, it really brings it home how much touring, how much play, and of course never-ending training goes into professional sport these days. And you know how much of a discussion is there about managing not just their physical well-being but their mental well-being?
Yeah, I actually think that's the biggest part is that mental well-being. I mean, you have so much medical support around, you know, player loading and things like from the physical perspective around player loading, and they're just managed so closely there. And if you are carrying a niggle, they always take a very conservative approach there. But we seem to forget about that mental side. And if you just think how exhausted you would be, just that whole never having any come down and just having to think, you know, about the next game, the next game, the next game. So yeah, it was an unfortunate sort of timing for Gary Stead there, but I think yeah, New Zealand cricket absolutely took the right approach there.
To golf, and there will be a Swedish star, Pernilla Lindberg, at the New Zealand Golf Open this year, or invited to at least.
Yeah, that's right. We're at the New Zealand Golf, the Men's Open, which will be played later this month down at Millbrook. They've decided to invite a female player to tee off against the men. And yeah, they've kind of been patting themselves on the back, thinking, oh, we're so wonderful and innovative and inclusive. But I just, Steve Dean actually wrote a really good column for Newsroom this week about. You know, that whole idea of making female athletes or women golfers is kind of a gimmick, or is including them for novelty value actually kind of sets the sport back in a way, and it's not really meaningful change there. But I find it particularly galling just because there hasn't been a New Zealand Women's Open since 2017, and there's been no mention of bringing it back.
What happened?
Yeah, well, exactly. So, you know, the New Zealand Women's Open was always a really good event. It was part of the European Tour, and they tended to play down in Clearwater for a number of years there. And they got really good attendance from some really good players, including Lydia Ko would play there a lot. And then they decided to go big and pitch for a place on the LPGA Tour. And so that came to New Zealand in 2017, and we haven't seen it since. I know they'd been looking at trying to get back for 2020 as yet. Well, LGPGA has released their schedule and the New Zealand Open is not on it. And there's been no word from New Zealand Golf about their plans for the future of that tournament.
All right, Olympics, they come round, don't they? Almost as rapidly as elections, not quite as rapidly as elections. But of course, well before they arrive is the... time limits or the deadlines for getting yourself nominated. Is it crunch time for a number of athletes?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a number of athletes, your top stars would have, you know, secured their positions or at least qualified for the Olympics last year, but now it's kind of coming down to selecting for those spots. So in a lot of sports, you kind of, like in rowing, for instance, you qualify the boat, but that doesn't guarantee the individual that place in that boat. And so, now we're seeing it really come down to the wire. We've got some big events coming up on the athletics circuit. We've got the Porritt Classic this weekend down in Hamilton, quite a famous track and field meet, which I imagine we'll see a lot of the top stars at. And also we've got the canoe sprint nationals down in Karapiro this weekend as well. And Lisa Carrington could not make it to collect her statue last night because she's busy preparing for the nationals. So even, you know, your reigning Olympic gold medalists still have to get out there and compete and prove they're worthy of that spot at the Olympics.
All right. And are we seeing any new and emerging stars? I suppose that will be something to explore over some of these nationals, see if we have any upsets or any surprises coming through, or any of those we expect to qualify missing the cut.
Yeah, I think rowing's going to be a really interesting one. There's a massive battle for spots there, particularly the women's crews are very settled. They were kind of the stars of last year for that rowing team. And now you might see a bit of chopping and changing between boats. Robbie Manson, who was for a long period the guaranteed selection in the single scales there, he's decided to step away from that single scales boat because he hasn't been getting the performances at world championship level. He seems to dominate the New Zealand scene every year, but he just can't convert that on the international scene. So I think he's now pitched for a position in the double scales, which and will mean a bit more rejigging, and I think there's going to be some very good rowers miss out and could even head to the old sports tribunal. Who knows?
Ah, that would be a story. Thank you, Dana. Really appreciate it. Dana Johansson, Stuff National correspondent, our sports commentator.